Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello, welcome to Garibaldi Red for the final time this year as we reflect on another tough away day for Nottingham Forest as they lost 3-0 at Manchester United last night. We'll look back on that game and we'll also look ahead to Chelsea on New Year's Day, touch on the League Cup quarterfinals and shirt sponsorship in the company of, first of all, on location from Manchester, Michael Temple. Temps, how are you?
Morning. Looking a bit like Gary Birtle was holding the phone up, aren't I? But yeah, apart from that, I'm okay. Good night in Manchester for me, after the game at least. And yeah, good to catch up with you boys.
Good. And second guest today, also back from Manchester, is Greg Mitchell. Greg, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. It's like changing of roles today. I was designated driver last night and got home nice and sober with a clear head. So it might be a completely different perspective from me today.
Well, there are a few perspectives on the game. Actually, we'll come to the game in a minute. I should just say thank you to everyone who attended the live podcast. I put that at the top of my notes just before Christmas, freezing cold. So a good turnout. Very much appreciated. I think it went well. Greg, any asking for selfies after appearing on the stage for the Q&A or anything?
No. Don't fuel my friend's little thing he's got against me. No, nobody's recognising me. It's how I like it. Thank you.
Good. Right. So, thanks very much to everyone who attended, and we'll do another one in the summer because it went very well. Old Trafford, then. I think there's a couple of schools of thought on it. There's the school of thought that it was absolutely disastrous and Forest were as bad as they were against Arsenal and Leicester. And there's the school of the thought that, you know, enjoy the ride, let's all be positive and just move on. Temps, where are you on it? Are you in the middle or firmly in one of those camps?
Yeah, somewhere between the two for me. I think we saw what Man United are and what they can be in this post-Ronaldo era, Bruno Fernandes being at the heart of the team, but having 11 players that can play football at pace, with precision, you know, between some of them, months and years on the training ground, pulling out set-piece moves like the one that led to Rashford's goal. So I will credit Man U. I can see why they've recovered from the start they had, and why they're a force we reckon for. From our perspective, another lesson in the level and finding that when you go to one of those top six sides, maybe seven with Newcastle now, and find them on song at home, it's going to be really, really tough. So I'm not down in the doldrums because I didn't necessarily expect us to get anything from that game. We've spoken before about the run of fixtures after Chelsea where we have to move. But yeah, I'm not going to be down in the doldrums too much. But for me, fair play to Man U. They tore us apart.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it wasn't Arsenal, it wasn't Man City, that was too early in the season, so it wasn't Leicester, it wasn't great. I don't think Forest played terrible, I don't think they played well. They created enough to create goals, but again, we'll come on to this, an away plan I think can work, and I don't feel like playing like that is going to work unless they're really good individually, and I don't think they were. I think if I was rating the players, it's not like they came off the pitch and I thought everyone was a 7 out of 10. I thought Ryan Yates was and Wayne Hennessy was, although he was a bit of a couple for the second goal, but there was a few too many 5 out of 10s for me, and we'll come on to the subs and stuff like that. So I'm with Temps. It wasn't an absolute disaster, but it wasn't great. It was a little bit anemic for me. What about you, Greg?
Yeah, well, I'd say to like a different opinion on that is, when we went to Man City, when we went to Arsenal, you looked at the stadium and you went, oh, this is nice. Oh, we're losing, but isn't it nice? Yesterday, although we weren't the best team by any stretch of the imagination, but I always felt like we were close to being in it. You know, when we got that disallowed goal, I thought, yes, this is it. We've got a genuine chance now. And, you know, nine corners, loads of set pieces. they weren't very good when we got them, but we got the chances and we were getting opportunities. We've just got to be so much more clinical, because if we're going to be having nine corners, we've got to make sure at least the five or six of them are getting over the first man. So that was infuriating. But with who's coming around the corner, and you notice with Scarpa's friendly games, he's been taking every set piece. So there is hope there. Like I say, it was nothing like that Man City game. Man United are a top six side. They were supposed to beat us, and they beat us on paper quite comfortably. But we did have our chances. And there are players in that team that showed a bit last night that I'm sure we'll get onto individuals. But yeah, I didn't walk out doom and gloom like some in that away end did. And they were well within the rights to. But I drove away thinking, you know what, there's chances there, there's opportunities there. These massive away games where we're going to be going there and expecting to finally get that second away goal and some. So, yeah, we're not out of this. We can do it. We've just got to figure out how to do it. And I don't think it'll be long.
What do you make of the away tactics attempts, the setup? Because these games aren't going to decide if Forest stay up, but they do need to get a few points at a Southampton, at a Fulham, at a Bournemouth. Do they need to change the way they're going about it, or can this work?
No, we need to change the way we're going about it, don't we? Away wins in the Premier League, extremely hard to come by, as we know, but we're not going to get them playing like that. And you're not going to get them when you don't change the approach once you go behind, particularly when you find yourself 2-0 down in the Premier League. I think the attacking setup now is a symptom of the personnel we have and the mix that Cooper wants still being a little bit unclear, because Awoniyi looked lost, didn't he? The bit that he's there for, winning the physical battle, he found himself well and truly swallowed up by Varane. Brennan Johnson found himself in Luke Shaw's pocket for much of the first half. I think that the defending from the front is so important in the Premier League, and we've never quite found a way to do that. We didn't counter with the requisite pace to trouble Man United, who are very mobile. Even their defensive midfielders are very adept on the ball and can break it up and play. So it's hard to be critical when we're talking about sheer ability and individual talent to make these systems work. And Man U seemed to have that last night. They had a real clarity in how they wanted to play. They moved the ball quickly, changed the point of attack, and got in down the sides a lot. Whereas we, for me, looked a little bit blunt in possession, a little bit rushed, resorted too often to the long ball, to players who aren't necessarily adept at winning the long ball, at challenging for headers, didn't pick up any second balls, and Awoniyi, who was supposed to be that physical outlet, had a bad game. So no, some of the issues we saw last night will have to be addressed with recruitment rather than a tweak to the system, because you can't open yourself up on the road too much. But yeah, there were times last night where we looked really blunt and the setup looked ineffective.
What did you make of Awoniyi, Greg? It was a bit weird. He was playing like from the left, like Rashford was, and I think it looked like they said to him, be Keane and Davis last season and run 80 yards and have everyone bounce off you, and it didn't really work, did it? I mean, I think that they don't seem to have that balance right in attack, do they, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, one of our signals went a little bit there, but with Taiwo, I saw a little bit of a different side to him last night. I saw a lot of energy in the first half and a lot of attempts to try and get forward and make something, create things that possibly weren't there. It was weird that he was so far on the left and like a big, strong striker like that, get him down the middle and get things through to him. But I saw some hope there. I saw the fact that we should try and stick with him and, you know, give him another go. Southampton away, perfect opportunity, big, strong, you know, get him in there and get him in the middle. But yeah, I don't think any of our players had a good game last night, but I certainly don't think Taiwo had one of his worst. I thought there was more promise there with him than there wasn't.
How much they missed Gibbs White attempts? Because Lingard went off injured. Dennis came on, didn't do a lot. Surridge came on, didn't do a lot. you take a couple of these players out and it shows, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, they need to find a way to play without him because, you know, I'm hearing it's probably another couple of weeks at least, unlikely to feature against Chelsea. We miss him. I mean, he's been our most promising, probing player. He's so much more comfortable on the ball, really adept at playing that forward pass. And while we've got three or four players in and around the squad and Scarpe, we've been added to that mix who would call themselves number 10. What we've seen it with our own eyes is him being far more effective than the competition in that role. So he will be a miss. Greg's seen far more of Scarpa than I have. I think it would be really, really tough to unleash him for a Premier League start. I think he'll be easing from the bench at some point. I know there's some debate as well whether or not he'll be eligible to play against Chelsea. But we thought we'd crack that position, that tactic of getting Gibbs White on the ball between the lines and playing that probing forward pass, and this will set us back, there's no question. I'm just checking myself for a sec. I do sound like a bit of a doom monger compared to the ongoing optimism of Greg Mitchell, and I don't want to come across like that, because I think pre the break and in some of those performances, particularly just before the World Cup break, we'd seen so much improvement. And that we saw it continue in the cup game against Blackburn, and I do expect that spark to come back in that run of fixtures that we have as January progresses. But I just think, in the context of a post Man United pre Chelsea chat, we have to acknowledge that we still haven't found a way to be effective against the more accomplished teams. And I think Gibbs White is one of the X factor means of getting a break, getting a goal against one of play, countering with pace and undoing those type of teams. So, yeah, I think he'll be a huge miss.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm closer to you than... Well, I don't think Greg's been overly optimistic. I don't think... But I think I have to acknowledge it wasn't a great performance. But it hasn't changed my opinion of whether Forest will stay up or not, because I think there's going to be quite a lot of these away games where they don't play well and they lose. But there's going to be away games where they have to play better and they have to pick up points. And I don't think this is one of them, but they're going to have to go to Southampton and places like that. And they're going to have to find a way of being a lot more effective.
Yeah.
I mean, how much of it was their own doing, Greg? In terms, if we look at the goals, were all three avoidable?
The second one, yeah, looked like a bit of a goalkeeping error. And the third one, the one I noticed, was Worrell just like... He lost his man and then it just opened up and then, you know, off they went and scored. And that's the difference between these Premier League teams, that when they sniff a chance, it's a goal, isn't it? So we just have to be on our game for 100 minutes out of 90. And it's so frustrating that those little things cost us, because I do think we were in the game a lot more than we weren't. And it is all right. I've seen it all online saying, you know, happy clappers, just happy to be there. But I drove home last night and I drove home past Stoke's ground, and it was a real remember where we were this time last year and where we are now. We've got a great chance to get out of this, and it's not even a mess at the minute. You know, we are in this fight. We've just got to let it click. And like I say, you know, one goal away from home and we're coming into January, that's bad, isn't it? But somehow... the home form and the odd away point or what have you, it's kept us right in it. And like I say, we'll strengthen more than others in January. So I think that we're not in a bad position as some of us, you know, especially on Twitter. I don't know why I read it all this morning. Some of us would like to believe we are. So yeah, I'm fine at the minute. And I think we get results in the next two games.
I hope so. What did you make of midfield, Temps?
Uncomfortable on the ball at times, closed down under a really effective press. I mean, I'm going to join the Casemiro fan club later today. I thought he was excellent, both defensively, organisationally, and the ability to spray that flat pass 50, 60 yards in both directions to get tricky wingers on the ball in space was good to watch, wasn't it? I'll also just rewind into the question about the Man U goals. I'll credit them for the corner routine. From their perspective, that's something that they've worked on. They've worked on the timing, they've worked on the accuracy of the pass, and that the finish from Rashford was there. The one that disappointed me was the Martial goal, because he side-footed that, and I think Hendo saves it I think if he had his time again, Hennessy would probably clear that with his foot. He's tried to get down and smother it, and it's almost gone through him, frankly. So I think that was an avoidable goal. But yeah, that Man United midfield has a group of players where you're not compromising quite the way we are. And if I pick him, I get that, but I lose the other. If I pick him, this bit improves, this bit doesn't improve quite so much. And it got me thinking about Prutton's point when he's speaking to you fellas last week about improving the spine. And I just wonder if the calling that we had pre-Christmas for centre-half and striker might be usurped by the need to get a true all-round, gritty, butt ball-playing midfielder who can affect us at both ends of the pitch, because that was the difference to me yesterday, really. Their back four was comfortable in control. Their wide boys, their offensive players were getting the ball in space. But the heartbeat of that side was the strength in centre mid. And for various reasons, the Cech Coyote injury, the Gibbs White injury, one or two other bits and pieces, Mangala coming back after a bit of a bitty first half of the season. Froiler looking, I thought, particularly ineffective last night. And Yatesy, to his credit, doing what he always does, trying to get something going through sheer work rate and determination. The mix didn't look quite right last night. Mangala didn't look as comfortable as he had done. Froiler was, I thought, a bit anonymous. Yatesy put himself about and, frankly, deserved that goal, which we'll come on to in a minute, I'm sure. So, yeah, but that's it, isn't it? You're going to have these times when players are injured, suspended, unavailable, whatever. You've got to deal with it. And we're not able to put our best midfield on the park at this moment in time.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Yates was the pick of the three again. I feel for Mangala because he's not really got going. I think he needs a run of games, but it wasn't his night. And I'd agree about Froiler. That midfield balance is interesting in how they solve it and how they find it for the second half of the season. Temps mentions the goal, Greg. Well, have you seen it back since you got back, the disallowed goal?
No, I haven't. And at the time, we couldn't understand because we were told, I don't know whether you'll be able to tell it, we were told they were checking for the handball, weren't they? And then suddenly it was offside and apparently it was. So unfortunate, because I didn't even realise Bolly was anywhere near it. But yeah, at the time, I was celebrating like anything. And my mate Steve next to me says, "No, look at the keeper running towards the ref." And then you knew straight away. So, and what a time to score. Absolute game changer of time. So once that got disallowed, it kind of it sapped everything out of us, really. And second half started. We showed a little bit in the second half, but it kind of went into a damp squib and it was over, wasn't it? So it was a real shame and just showed that we get the opportunities. We can get them, can't we? So take something from that, definitely.
Can I just come in on the VAR point? So we got in the bar afterwards and watched the replays and saw the VAR process again in real time. In the stadium, no one knew what was being checked for. The Man United fans were singing an anti-VAR chant while that ridiculously long wait went on. And what had actually transpired, while the editor was presenting the footage to check for a handball, he played it too far on and found this deflection off Bolly's foot and then went to check for the offside. They checked and checked and checked that incident to the nth degree. And the question I've got is, do they do that? If that's a Man United goal being checked in that atmosphere at that stadium with the reputation of that club, do they go to the nth degree and find something incidental in the clip that they've only seen because they've rocked and rolled it so many times, slightly further than they thought to? It clearly went nowhere near Yates's arm. And only because the editor then watched those extra few seconds did they see the touch off Bolly's foot and the goal. Ultimately, it was a correct decision. It did hit Bolly. It probably was going wide off Yates's head. And they disallowed the goal. But the frustration in the ground, the time taken, the fact that nobody in that entire venue of 73,000 people could see with the naked eye any reason why that goal was disallowed. And only when it was watched 20 times and fast-forwarded beyond the instant they were checking did they find a reason to rule it out. I thought we were really, really hard done to there. And I just question whether it was applied in the same way in both directions. There was a foul in the build-up to one of the Man United goals, for example, that wasn't checked. It was a pretty clear foul. I think we can rightly feel aggrieved by that, even though they ultimately made an accurate decision.
I suppose one of the ironies is the goal or disallowed goals. It was actually a good delivery into the box. It was probably the only one. I mean, how in the ground, Greg, was it even worse? Was it like, were fans getting frustrated at the quality of delivery from Forrest?
Yeah, because like I say, nine corners. We don't get nine corners at home in the Premier League. So to not get them past the first man so many times is where it's critical that if Scarpa is good enough to play, he's going to be set pieces. Or, you know, Gibbs White, or I think when Nico came on, he put a couple of good balls in. So set pieces, you do them all day, every day on the pitch, and they're infuriating. However, Man United's first goal, I thought, oh, it's poor corner, you know, along the bottom, and it was great. So sometimes it can work, but I don't think we were meaning to make it hit the first defender every single time, it seemed. So that was really frustrating, and it got the crowd moaning. You know, everyone was just annoyed, but we'll get the opportunities, we'll improve them, and we'll keep practicing, and it will get better, that will.
I suppose the question is, let's assume Lingard's out, Temps, and Gibbs White is out as well. The question is, Dennis or Scarpa? Because, you know, like you've said, it's a tough one to throw Scarpa in, but do you persist with Dennis? Because I'm firmly in the camp, he hasn't done a lot. What would you be doing against Chelsea?
Well, look, the popular shout is going to be for Scarpa, isn't it? I think you're always a better player when you're out of the team, or when your clips are from a league in which you've dominated, which Scarpa has to a point in Brazil. He ain't going to just click into a struggling at this stage Premier League team and set it on fire. But if a decision's been made behind the scenes that he's the man, then he needs to be educated and eased in pretty slowly, I think, from the bench at first. Too big a risk to start an unproven South American at such a critical point in the season. So I think Dennis probably finds himself just ahead at the minute. I know in the text you sent us overnight, you didn't think Dennis had his best game. Nobody did, but he was looking for work. He was more effective than Surridge, who got no ball and therefore couldn't affect the game. But Dennis was a bigger influence than Surridge yesterday. He's shown flashes, like the headed goal that he took really well, that he can be a threat at this level. Hopefully he knows that he hasn't fulfilled himself at this point. He certainly hasn't endeared himself to Forest fans to any particular point at this moment in time. We've just got to be careful that we don't throw Scarpa in too soon, expose him, see him struggle, and then cast him aside when one of those boys you've mentioned comes back. So that will be a difficult call for Cooper, but he's level-headed, he's cool-headed, he's not going to bow to, you know, any shouts from the terraces. And for that reason, I think he's probably got Dennis fractionally ahead of Scarpa at this moment in time.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What about
you? Two disagree, don't you? You both disagree. Greg's like, get Scarpa in, make him captain.
Go on, Greg. What do you think?
I met him in John Lewis last week. Lovely bloke.
Everyone's met him. I think I'm the only person who hasn't met him.
Just go and collect something from John Lewis and he'll be like, yeah. He's good. He seems very good in South America, but that means nothing over here, does it? So I absolutely agree with Temps that it's a risk. But I think it's a risk that we have to take because Dennis has, you know, he's had plenty of minutes. He hasn't really shown anything yet. Is Scarpa that spark? And I feel like if we don't play him, if he's allowed to play against Chelsea, that's the first thing, or it's an irrelevant conversation. If we don't play him against Chelsea, then his first game's away at Southampton, which is tough. And then you're looking at, what is it? I can't remember the next home game, Leicester at home or something. So before you know it, you're so far into the season that the horse might be bolted. So if he's available against Chelsea and our only other option is like starting a Dennis or any, I mean, none of us know what's going on in training, then if he is in that starting lineup against Chelsea, it means that he's good enough in Cooper's eyes, and I'd be excited to see him. And the key thing is the set pieces. You know, Gibbs White not going to be there. The others looking at him, there's no one there that's been putting him in very well. So if he's fit enough and if he's there in training, I'd love to see him start, because that's a massive sign for us.
Mm. And the I think I'd probably lean towards Dennis still. I don't think he's done a lot. I just worry that you play Scarpa and he has a nightmare, and then it knocks him back 3 or 4 weeks. I think I might save him. But
is he not going to have that? If that's the case, is he not going to have that nightmare in 3 or 4 weeks? Let's find out straight off for me. Find out and take the risk, and could it be a game changer?
I suppose we trust whatever Cooper sees in training. He'll see more than us. He'll know if he's ready. What about Surridge? He's the other one. Players always look better when they're not in the team. He came on, he didn't do a lot last night. But is it a bit unfair to judge a 30-minute cameo at Old Trafford when the game's gone, Temps? Does he still need that run for us to really judge him properly?
Surridge has been, pound for pound, one of the best signings we've made in a long, long time. His contribution at the back end of last season was immense. He surpassed everybody's expectations. However, the analysts will say he's not quick enough to be a threat in the Premier League. Now, the way he plays and the nature of his goals, the one-touch finishes, the coolness under pressure, the ability to find a corner, you might say that, well, pace doesn't matter in his game. Pace is not an important part of his game. Unfortunately, I think he finds himself trapped in that narrow bit of no man's land, in that he could be a 20-goal championship striker, but I don't think he could ever be a 10-goal Premier League striker. I think he's a brilliant player, one of my favourite Forest players off the back of what he did last year. I just think that if we think he's the answer in this global Super League that we find ourselves playing in, he'll get found out for that lack of pace. And that's the only conversation that's going on in Forest. If this lad was a second quicker over 60, 70 metres, you'd be starting him every week, because he's got all the attributes, hasn't he? He's just, like I said before, lovely feet, cool finish, brings others into play, unselfish runs, drags defenders. Is he quick enough to be a threat in the Premier League? I don't think he is. And I'm a big Sam Surridge fan. I just can't see it. He'd have been frustrated yesterday because he came on wanting to affect the game and the ball never found him. And he can't do too much about that. But he did. He looked blunt because they marked him tightly, gave him close attention, shut down his supply, and he made no impact. I'm really sorry to say it, because you just heard in my preamble there, I qualified the answer by saying he's a player I really like and respect, but I don't think he's the answer to keeping us in the Premier League.
Do you think the thing with Sam is, Greg, you need to... he's a great finisher, so you've got to create the chances for him, haven't you? He'd look really good in a team that's creating a lot of chances, like they were in the Championship. But in the Premier League, if you're not getting the chances and you're not bringing... Does he have to bring a bit more to his all-round game? I mean, it feels harsh criticising off that game. So he was brilliant against Spurs. Do we just need to see a bit more of him? But does he need to bring a bit more to the party in a sense as well?
Yeah, it's catch 22 really, because we're not going to give him 90 minutes, are we? Unless there's two or three more injuries, he's not going to get that run to prove that he can be good enough in the Premier League. So we're not going to see it. He's coming on for 20-minute cameos when the game's pretty much already gone. He's just not going to get that opportunity. So sadly, I agree with Temps, to be honest, that I think if he went out on loan in the Championship, or even if someone signed him, it'd be an incredible signing for them, and he'd do what he did for them, what he did for us last season. But with only 25 spaces in this squad, and we drastically need to improve in certain areas, you know, the Taiwo, Surridge, Jono, Dennis, the four of them, we've got to get another piece, a quality striker up there to get, you know, to get these 10 goals or these 5 away goals that we might need over the next few weeks, because they're not coming at the minute, especially with Gibbs White out. Lingard, you know, he pulled up. You don't know whether he's going to be a few weeks. We've got to add quality, but I think we've got to add quality quickly. And unfortunately, we're going to have to, you know, remove one of these squad players for that to happen.
Let's talk about Chelsea then a little bit. We can talk about individuals and the team shortly, but I suppose home and away are chalk and cheese temps, aren't they? But do we need to see, and I've seen the word intensity in the comments a fair few times. Do we need to see just more intensity and more pressing? Is your I know you've discussed it before, but need to see Forest get up and at them a bit more than they did against Man U?
Yeah, you do. I mean, you want 11 players with the work rate of Ryan Yates, don't you? You have to affect it, get amongst them. I think Chelsea will pose a specific threat that we struggle with, and that they have a lot of pace up front, right? So if they, Havertz and Sterling for a starter, Mason Mount in behind, there's a lot of players there who will want to run at our back four. And I think I'll be interested in the Forest team selection. We'll get onto that in a second, I'm sure. But they do pose a threat, which you could make a case that we struggle with, just having out-and-out pace and dribblers up top. However, so did Crystal Palace. And we dealt with them really effectively to the point where Zaha found himself having a strop for the last half an hour and becoming quite anonymous. So I think the message that I'd be giving to the Forest players pre-Chelsea, if I was Steve Cooper, is we have to outrun these. We have to make the most of this atmosphere. The fans are still with us. We've had some good results at home, specifically the Liverpool game, which was a bit of a burglary, perhaps, but the Palace game, we absolutely deserved to win. If we bring those levels of intensity, discipline, consistency, we can get at them. I say all the time, I don't think you're going to win many games in the Premier League with 30% possession. So I hope we find the way of looking after the ball. I'm slightly concerned, as we all should be really, about the players who aren't available to us, because I think our best 11 gives anybody a game at home, but they're a quality side that need to be respected. They've got this, they haven't had the new manager bounce necessarily. He's trying to impose his style of play on the team and his way of working, but he's had a pretty tough baptism. So they shouldn't quite be the same prospect as Man United away. But yeah, you're right. We'll have to find an intensity and a means of getting at them, unsettling them, not allowing them to feel comfortable on the ball, not allowing them to have 70% possession if we're going to get on the front foot and go after them.
How are you feeling about it, Greg? Forest are hurt by a couple of injuries, but back on home turf where form's, you know, chalk and cheese. Are you feeling pretty upbeat about it?
Yeah, I watched the Chelsea-Bournemouth game before our game last night. And they went 2-0 up pretty comfortably, but then Bournemouth really started to go at them. And I think if you don't show them the respect, you're going to get chances against them. They're a team under massive pressure to get in that top four. And I think if we can get in at them early, we can really cause some damage. And, you know, I'm not saying we're going to beat Chelsea at home, but I think we could certainly draw against them on our day. The injuries are critical for us, and it's who's back and who's going to play. But yeah, that ground has to be as big a fortress as it ever has been for the whole of, you know, last season and the beginning of this season, because it's a huge game, and we can't be going into Southampton feeling like we did against Bournemouth and Fulham, where these are the games where we get points, because that is game of the season, Southampton, for me, and it's a huge chance as well. So these two games are big. These two games are the ones that can get us out the top three with a few points in hand as well, or really make us realise how much of a struggle this season could be going forward.
I think that's the problem with the away form, that if we're not going to pick up any points away, it cranks up the pressure on all these home games. Because now I take a point against Chelsea and that's a great result, but then then it puts pressure on the next away game. I just think we just need to find a way of, got two away points, need to find a way of getting 12 away points through the season, or 15 somehow. And when that happens, I think it'll change the picture a bit. But I'm still very optimistic about this game. Let's talk about team selection. I've scribbled down an 11 here, and I've written pick from a position of and players perhaps not on peak form. But I've picked this 11. Henderson back in goal. Aurier, Worrell, McKenna I've put in. I'm not a hill to die on, but I've just put McKenna in instead of Bolly. Lodi, Yates, Mangala, Freuler, so the same midfield. And I've put down, I know I said Dennis earlier, but I put down Johnson, Scarpa, Awoniyi, question mark, question mark, question mark. What do you think about that, Temps? Are you making any changes or does that sound decent?
Does Lodi come under pressure from Nico Williams? I don't think we saw the best of him yesterday. I think throughout the World Cup and in the football he's played since then, Nico has looked really sharp. I like Aurier at right back. Yesterday was a tough day for him. I'd make a case for Nico coming in at left back. The Bolly thing surprised me. I think there was a desperate 15 minutes, wasn't it, at the end of the Palace game when we were trying to defend long balls, and he was exceptional at that point and kind of earned the right to keep the shirt for a bit. But for me, for a long time, McKenna and Cook were ahead of Bolly for good reason. Personally, I'd like to see McKenna in over Bolly. The central midfield mix will be, as you said, out of pure necessity, really, given the players that are missing. I'm Dennis over Scarpa by a hair's breadth at the minute. Scarpa from the bench with the chance to earn a shirt and earn a run in the side for 4 or 5 games if he finds himself comfortable with the level. But I would make a bit of a case for Nico Williams. I'd make a bit of a case for Emmanuel Dennis. Scarpa would be my first change, irrespective of the result, the score, the position we find ourselves in at 60, 65 minutes. Henderson comes back in, obviously. Lodi didn't quite do enough for me yesterday.
What about you, Greg? You made a big case for Williams before this game. Would he be the one for you? Any other players you'd make a case for?
Yeah, I've wrote one down for once. It shows.
Oh, good. Well, let's hear it. Sorry. Shows, yeah.
Driving can be a good thing to a game.
Let's hear your sober 11.
Well, Hendo, obviously. McKenna and Worrell. I just think McKenna was missed last night. I need to get Nico in the team. He can take set pieces. He shows an attacking side that I don't think we have on each of those like wing-back positions. But Serge has to play because of his experience against teams like Chelsea. So, Lodi has to step back for me. It's the only way you can get Nico in this team is to, drop Serge or Lodi, which is a shame because arguably two of our strongest players. And then Yates, Froiler, Mangala, obviously, just because that's pretty much all we've got. There's not really a choice there. Taiwo, Scarpa, if he's allowed to play, and Jono. And then on the bench, you've got like your O'Briens, Surridges, Dennis's, Toffolo, who showed a bit again. We have got the bench, but it doesn't look half as strong as it did a few weeks ago. So these 11 players really have got to put a massive shift in. I mean, we got all 5 subs on last night, didn't we? And none of them really made an impact. So, yeah, we're missing that strong bench that we're going to obviously build on in January either way.
O'Brien's a funny one, isn't he, Thames? Because he came on, he played as a 10 or more advanced midfield, which is a little bit unusual. I mean, we're saying there's no one else to come in. At the start of the season, he was perhaps our best player before Yates broke through. Would you like to see a bit more of O'Brien, or can you understand why he's dropped down the order?
Yeah, no one's calling for him, are they, in quite the way they were, because he had a decent start to the season. He got some minutes and looked very comfortable on the ball. And we thought maybe he can be a true number 8, box-to-box midfielder, making progressive passes and contributing defensively. We're still giving Froiler the nod on reputation, on what we saw at the World Cup, and the experience that he has. And I don't want to get into a long debate about this. You can see why he would be good in a team that's on the front foot all the time. But the reality is he's struggling a little bit in the way that we're playing at the minute. So Yates has won everybody round, and he's certainly not the more offensive of the three. And I was surprised to see him in that role yesterday. So yeah, he's just dropped down the pecking order a little bit for me. Like anybody, he can play his way back in, but it'll be minutes from the bench at this point to do it. I don't think he's going to get the nod as a starter. He's just, it's so hard, is it? The nuance and the answer is always the same. They're all good players. To be in a Premier League 25 in any team, you have to be a good player. But we're talking about that difference between being a 7 out of 10 and an 8 out of 10, an 8 out of 10 and a 9 out of 10. And he finds himself down the roster a little bit. So no, I don't see how O'Brien can improve our starting 11 at this point.
Yeah, and things can change quickly, like you say. I mean, we're talking about Scarpa to death. He could be brilliant on New Year's Day and then we're like, oh, he's got to play the rest of the season. So, and then we've said that about Mangala's got to play the whole season, and now he's questions against him. So things do change quickly, certainly. Let's add Greg back in. Hello, Greg. You've moved. How are you?
Lost you. Don't know what happened there.
Don't worry.
So you got bored of me.
No. Let's move on. Just got 10 minutes or so to touch on a few other topics I mentioned at the start. You got League Cup fever yet, Greg?
Yeah. Although, I don't know if it was Mikey in the group pointed out that if we beat Wolves, which is a massively winnable game, could you imagine two games against Man City? That could be one hell of a trip. But yeah, League Cup fever. It'll be a sold-out City ground. It's cheaper tickets, like £20, I think. I think season ticket holders have got to get on it today. So, or tomorrow. Yeah, fantastic. It shows the progression, doesn't it? Blackburn, I know it was their week 11, but we just absolutely destroyed them, didn't we? So it shows that for all the doom that's been spoke about these last few days, how we have improved as a club over the past year to, you know, brush Blackburn aside and then have Wolves at home and feel like we can get to a semi-final. Yeah, I've got League Cup fever. I've just proved it to myself.
If I know Greg Mitchell, by the way, he's already booked a hotel room for the Wembley final. It might be one of those rooms with free cancellation, but he's looked into rail strikes. He's got an alternative means of transport. He's arranged 50 boys to help him put out an amazing display. And come what may, Greg has got a means of doing a Wembley in February.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
just doesn't get us to Europe, though, does it? I've looked into that. It's a big shame.
Does it not?
I don't think so.
Don't you get in the like Europa Conference or something?
Maybe. I was told we don't, so I hope I'm wrong.
I'll have to check that. I think it gets you into that third competition now, which I'd certainly take. Last topic before we go to any other business. The shirt sponsorship issue was resolved when Forest they gave money to the UN refugee campaign and obviously put it on all the shirts for men and women, which is a great touch. Temps, from you work in this area, what do you make of it? A great PR move and just a nice thing to do?
Look, it's a brilliant PR move. It's a brilliant charity. So absolute fair play to the ownership of Forest for making that gesture. Let me qualify that by saying there'll be a point in time, whether it's now or in the future, where £8 million in cash, albeit from a gambling partner, on the front of that shirt would be very useful for our football club. So the strategy of holding out for 10 million, it not coming and having the strength of resolve to say, no, we're not taking 6, 7, 8 million, whatever was offered, is an odd business decision. And there's people at Forest, you know, charged with maximising the income from the club. And they did their job. They went out there and got the market offer for that shirt and it was turned down. And we all know the reasons for that. And our owner has every single right to make that decision, because ultimately it's him that will plug any deficit at the football club. So a fantastic outcome from a PR perspective, but turning down multi-million pound offers for inventory as prime as the front of a Premier League football shirt is an odd business decision. He obviously feels in the long term people know our price and won't try to undercut us with offers below what he sees as the market value. But there'd be a lot of commercial directors at rival Premier League clubs who would view that as a strange decision. But fair play, the charitable gesture is a really good one. And when we get the chance, I'll be down there to get it applied to my shirts.
Greg, from a purely fan's point of view, what do you make of the decision to put the charity on the shirt?
Yeah, I went down, started my Christmas shopping Christmas Eve, went down to the club shop, of course, got my dad some slippers, and it was in the shop front, and it looked fantastic. It was just nice to see it. You know, I mean, I know it's a huge charity, but it's a worldwide recognised charity, and, you know, what's going on with Ukraine and in Afghanistan over the past few years, it's just a real nice, lovely gesture that our owner's done that, and I think it will really help them as well, so... I know I've got friends at Forest who are like got family in Ukraine and stuff at the minute. So I know things like that's going to mean a huge amount to them, and it should be very proud of what they've done, really. So, yeah, I'm all for it. And I'm personally glad we've gone that way. And I don't know, it might affect us in the future, but it's a nice touch.
Any other business before we go? Any final thoughts from your Manchester hotel temps?
Yeah, well, look, bit of a shameless one. Thanks to my mate Holty who sorted my tickets out at Man United. Great talk, really appreciate it. Second one. So I was with my mate Rainsy, who's over from New Zealand. Thought we'd have a little trip to Old Trafford, and he's a massive Holmes Under the Hammer fan. And we bumped into Dion Dublin in the bar afterwards, and he always said if you met Dion Dublin, he was going to confront him about Holmes Under the Hammer and the means in which they film things out of sequence to make it appear that it's all planned and the build has been in the preamble, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is a lot of the scenes are filmed on the same day. And he was so in awe of Dion Dublin that he bottled his big opportunity to confront him about this thing that's irked him for years. So, yeah, Dion, lovely fella. Enjoy his work. And it was nice to say hello and have a little photo yesterday. But yeah, my little mate Rainsy blobbed his big opportunity. I think that's a regret he'll live with for a long time.
That was what
I. Do you watch Holmes Under the Hammer?
I love Holmes Under the Hammer.
Yeah.
After I had surgery a while ago, I watched the same. I mean, every episode is the same. Firehags, it's SHI. You know, it needs work. Throw some money at it, as little as you can, and then just sell it, flog it on. But they're always in. Why are they always in Stoke or Mansfield? They're always in. They can only or like Maidenhead or something. They can only film in the same three places.
Well, look, you've got questions as well. So if you ever meet Dion, ask him about these things. I'm sure he'll tell you. But yeah, opportunity missed for little Rainsy.
Greg, anything weirder than that to add?
Well, no. I have got something actually. But you say why are they always in Stoke? I think when you said the SHIT thing. But yeah. I probably won't be on again for the next couple of weeks, so I want to get it in. I've not let you down yet with music ever. So Beat the Streets, end of January, January 29th for Framework Charity. It's in Nottingham. It's my favourite day of the year for music. It's just everywhere. Rough Trade, Rock City, Rescue Rooms. Tickets are only a tenner. It goes straight to the charity. There's some unbelievable Nottingham bands, and this is where I haven't let you down yet. The Chase from St. Anne's, they are awesome. Please go and check them out. They should be playing. So, yeah, I said I'd shout them out, and they're a brilliant band. So get your Beat the Streets tickets. Forest aren't playing. It's a great Sunday in Nottingham.
Well, aren't you on the next few weeks? Are you away?
Well, no, we just rotate, don't we? So yeah, why not be on? I wanted to get it in whilst I could.
Yeah,
and I'm showing solidarity with Morgan Gibbs White, isn't he? He's just taking himself out of the frame.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Right. I think we'll leave it there. Some interesting discussions, interesting comments in the comment section. People firmly divided between we're doomed, we're utter rubbish, we're going down, and people who are more upbeat and more positive. I just think the picture changes from game to game. It just swings back and forth. If we're doing this after a draw or win against Chelsea, then we'll be saying we're definitely staying up and we're all upbeat. If we're doing this after Southampton, they've got tanks and they lost to Chelsea, then we're feeling very much downbeat. So let's just see how it goes. Try to enjoy the ride, everyone. Last night wasn't brilliant, but there's always another game. And thank goodness it's in the Premier League at the moment. So I think we'll leave it there. Greg, thank you very much.
I enjoyed it. Good to speak to you both.
Temp, thank you very much.
Mate, I enjoyed your final thought there. Jerry Springer-esque. Very good. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks very much. And thanks very much to everyone who watched along and listened as ever. Comments very much appreciated. Good reviews on subscriptions very much appreciated as well. And thanks once again to everyone who came to the live show. That was also very much. I'll see you all soon. Oh, and Happy New Year as well. She won't be back until then. So Happy New Year to everyone who listens and to you boys as well.
Cheers, Matt.